starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. With you and me, have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in there. Watching the crows, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, January 12, 2015. This is Deanna Spingola broadcasting from the snowy and very, very, very cold suburbs of Chicago. This radio program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that are not politically correct and those you might not hear about on other programs. My website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my three current books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book two and three. My new book will be coming out soon. It is titled Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. And I've also kind of remapped my website so that I've placed most of my Sandy Hook research all on one page. The links are all on one page. And you can just visit the website and click on the Sandy Hook research button and access that one page. And then, go and visit all the other links that I have there. Please also visit the website of a friend and listener who has created and maintains the website, SpingolaSpeaks.wordpress.com. He is amazing, and just I just so appreciate the work that he has done on that website. All of the more recent audio files of my programs are at that site, including the RBN audio files, the American Free Press audio files, all the specials that I've done, the audio files from this program. He is just amazing, and as I mentioned, I do really appreciate him. My Twitter account is twitter.com/DeannaSpingola. If you have questions during the program, you may call into the program at 646-787-1915. And, of course, we will be taking questions and comments from the listeners via my email, which is comment@spingola.com. Or we invite you to visit the chat room, which is spingola.chatango.com. My guest today for the 11th time is Mark R. Elsis. That is E-L-S-I-S. And inasmuch as the United Nations has established the International Holocaust Remembrance Day as January 27th, that's what we're going to be talking about today. And Mark has created this fabulous document called, and you can find that at holocaustrevisionism.com. Fabulous document. Mark, welcome to the program. And you are living in Florida. Oh, my gosh. How lucky can one be? What is the temperature down there?
I don't know. I didn't look this morning yet. So, but it's probably in the mid-60s. It is overcast though.
Oh gosh.
Yes, it's. I've been down here for the last 17 plus years now, and I enjoy it, but I do miss the seasons, the four seasons, and the changing of the seasons, and that, and snow skiing and such. But I find it nice down here. So today we're on to the 11th time. Deanna, thank you very much for having me back again and going into this most taboo subject known as Holocaust revisionism, which is also the the web address of the document that I've made, which is 170 pages and 1,000 source tot links. It's holocaustrevisionism.com. It's now in the, I think, fifth position in Google. Finally, after a long time, it's crawling its way upwards when you put in Holocaust revisionism, and gotten a lot of flack over these last 2 years and a lot of praise for it. So what I've done is, as I begin the document, I say this article is dedicated to everyone before me who has been ostracized, vilified, ridiculed, set up, threatened, lost their jobs, bankrupted, beaten up, firebombed, imprisoned, and killed for standing up and telling the truth on this historical subject. And some of these people that we're talking about are Robert Fersen, Ernst Zundel, Frederick Tobin, Bradley Smith, you have Arthur Butts, Bishop Williamson, and the list goes on and on and on of people who have gone before me and whose shoulders I'm standing on and whose work I have compiled. I have tried to, when I did this document, I tried to compile everyone and every part of this. Of course, you can't get every part, and I've been continuing updating it behind the scenes, and I probably will put out an updated version sometime. It's up to around 200 pages now, so I've added 30 pages in 2 years of new different subjects, other kind of issues that repudiate this story that has been put out and shoved down people's throats for the last 70 years now, mostly really the last 35 years or 40 years. And so it is these people that have, some of them lost their lives. There's the French person that put out Francis Duprat, who was, you know, his car was blown up and he was killed for putting out, did 6 million really die in France? And you have other lawyers like Doug Christie and Sylvia Schultz and Jürgen Reiger, who was also Zundel's lawyer, who got attacked right outside the courthouse in Germany, defending Ernest. So it is a lot of people, even David Irving, you know, who's, I guess you get a little controversial, but, you know, he's, all of these people have led the way and opened up this most taboo subject and have, most of them have paid a quite a heavy price. I mean, Fersen, who perhaps is the leader or the godfather of this movement, has been attacked 12 different times, I believe, and once very horribly. It's you know, Zundel went to jail for over 7 years, 2 different trials, and it's just, it goes on, and the other people have been, most of them been ruined one way or another, and they go after you financially. I've noticed very, very specifically, and try to bring you down, and so, or to capitulate in one way or another.
All right. And then you have new people. Well, Guillermo Rudolph has suffered, had been in prison.
Yes.
And then
yes.
You have people like Eric
Gunt. I particularly like his work, by the way.
Oh, yes. Fabulous.
Yes, and he spent, I think, 33 or 39 months in prison.
Yes.
For doing his work, which more or less was the second stage of Leicher's work. Fred Leicher.
Leicher, yeah.
Leicher, I'm terrible with names, excuse me.
Oh, me too. I butcher them all the time.
Yeah. But you were saying other people, go ahead. You were saying
like Eric Hunt. He's an up-and-coming video maker, and he lived in his car for a while. Because he was in prison for approaching Elie Wiesel to just ask a question, and Wiesel went after him with a lawsuit. And I mean,
was it the question of where's your tattoo?
Yes.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, Eric is now, from what I've gathered, is putting together a video about Hellstorm. About the Goodrich's book, which
that's Eric Hunt.
Oh, isn't that who we were talking about? I'm sorry.
No, No, wait. Eric, no, not Eric. It's Kyle Hunt.
Kyle Hunt, oh, God.
Okay, it's Kyle Hunt and Eric Hunt. Eric's doing the video.
Right, yes.
He's doing, right. Eric works on the videos right. about the various camps, and then Kyle is doing Hailstorm.
Oh, okay. I'm getting the Hunts mixed up.
Yes, and they're not related or anything. But
we're going to have to get together.
Yes, and then, of course, there are Fritz Berg, and, a lot of people
It goes on and on. Lady Michelle...
Renouf, yeah.
Renouf, right. And
Renouf, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just keeps going on and on. I mean, it takes a lot. Like, even Bishop Williamson, who came out there, whatever it was, 5, 6, 7 years ago now, and had that short video clip of him being asked in Germany what he thought of the Holocaust. And he quite eloquently said that he's looked into it extensively and to the best of his knowledge, less than 300,000 people died type of thing. And
sure.
This takes just enormous, for a person of his stature, that's going out on a limb. And, the interesting thing I find is that not too many people backed him up. You would think, here you go, you have somebody of his stature going out and saying this in a very eloquent way, and just not too many people go behind him and inside the religious sector and to back him up. I don't think anybody that I really know of came out. Behind the scenes, I bet a lot of people did, but. Not so they could be shown the light of day on them. So I understand this, but I don't understand it because once you scratch the surface of the Holocaust, it's been a long learning process for me. It's been well over a decade. That I've just learned one little piece and then another and then another. And then 2.5 years ago, I decided to write the piece that I'd written and investigate it quite thoroughly. I don't put anybody else down on their journey of this because it is a journey or on any so-called 9/11 or whatever very hot taboo subject you're talking about, we're all on the road of learning and we're here to help each other and to not push each other down, but to lend a hand and of knowledge to others to wake up and to grasp it. But I myself, when I've dug into all of these aspects from JFK's assassination to 9/11 to Holocaust revisionism, I've learned quite soon that they don't have a leg to stand on per se. It's very, very badly done, and yet they have the media. Of course, they own the Matrix, and they have. Really, I guess the shoved it down your throat is what comes to mind, especially with the Holocaust. And my rule of thumb is that when anybody's trying to do that, you know that it can't be true. And now here we have on January 27th, they're trying to get Obama and all these people. And Putin to go to Auschwitz and celebrate the 70th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, which would happen on January 27th, 1945. And it's an interesting aspect about the liberation because the Germans knew that the Soviets were coming in from the east. And they wouldn't be able to hang on to it, and so they gave the people in the camp the choice of staying behind or retreating westward with the Germans. And the vast majority of the people in the camp went with the Germans.
Sure.
So you have this very strange situation. I mean, if they're annihilating you, if they're causing genocide, meaning the Third Reich in this proposed story, then why would you go with your captors?
Of course.
It's just there's so many different little aspects like that that just do not add up. I mean, I know about the Stockholm Syndrome and that whole thing, but it's you know, you're about to be liberated, and you don't stay to be liberated from these people. And you know, there you go with Hellstorm again. I mean, look how they liberated the German people from 44 to 48. It's just amazing.
Indeed, yes. And as you were mentioning about all the people who have engaged in just looking at this, and people don't, it doesn't all come to you all at one time. You might start just very, very slowly. And I covered this in my third book about the Holocaust and about how they actually moved people from certain areas. The Soviets moved the Jews from an area to protect them. They moved them out of the war zones and moved them further east in order to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I talked about the census records that were taken and about the numbers and just things that kind of interest me logistically about mm-hmm. the Holocaust. I mean, you can't, if every other ethnic group that was involved in the war, World War II, if every other group lost millions and millions of people, and that group is the only one that didn't lose any at all, but actually the numbers increased according to the census figures, then there's something drastically wrong with the so-called official story. And
yes, especially when they had so few people. Jews make up around 0.2% of the world's population. And as many historians have noted, and I've written in this document, there were perhaps 3.5 tops 4 million Jews under when Germany was at its zenith.
Exactly.
In occupation. Most people are on the low side of that, 3.2 million. Specifically, it's very hard to grasp the exact number, but for what you said, the Russians were pulling them out. And the census numbers are, subsequently they've changed these numbers to bring it more up to, I think, 4.5 million fewer. But, you know, you look at the Red Cross numbers, which I believe
right.
was 271,000, and people don't understand that this is that the Jews were perhaps maybe 40% of these numbers.
Right.
So you take 271,000 and you get 40%, and that's only 108,000.
Right.
And this is, you know, this kind of is gone. It's just things like everybody. And this is the International Red Cross who went into the German camps and did documentation. And the Russians got that information when they went into these camps in Poland. And you know, it's just, that really nuggets of gold, I guess you could say, was when I stumbled upon that the German when the Germans had special camps for the airmen, like the our boys in the 8th Air Force,
mm-hmm.
and the survival rate was 98.9%.
Right.
So you have you have this as a documented proof also that they treated their POWs just exemplary. It just
right.
amazing.
Well as they could. As yes. well as they could.
Right.
And yes, it is amazing. And of course, the it didn't work as well for the camps. The government's camps.
Eisenhower's camps.
The survival rate at Eisenhower's camps versus the survival rate that the Germans maintained for the Americans. Oh, drastic.
Matter of fact, somebody should just do a story on that.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll ask John to go into that. I try to feed him different topics because this is quite poignant and quite factual. And you know, I like to have these kind of very factual little nuggets of history that help people that are beginning the path.
Mm-hmm.
Or to take actually the first step onto the path.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I wrote about Rudolf Hess. And I'm so happy that's number two in the world now in Google. So behind, of course, Wikipedia. But to put forth his story the best I could to, because he is that kind of person who was a poster boy for peace. And that's why he had to be dug up and his whole plots, him and his wife and his parents, totally vanished on July 20th. Huh? They did this on a specific day.
Wow.
So, we need I guess some more short factual things, just like we were just saying about, I love numbers and that kind of thing. So, because if you have the irrefutable proof and the numbers, like 98.9% of all airmen, you know, lived in German camps, it's like, what? And then you juxtapose that with what happened in Eisenhower's camps, where, you know, well over a million died, a million German.
And you never even hear about that. The mainstream media, of course, would never, 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 never discuss anything like this. And people, even though the numbers have been drastically changed in certain reports, it's never mentioned. Everybody still maintains, well, not everybody, but most people, the majority of the people in this country, maintain that 6 million Jews died. That's what they teach. That's in the school system. And, of course, it's been institutionalized as part of the American school system. And so children are learning, growing up, with the idea that that the Germans killed 6 million.
Yeah, it's like I alluded to earlier, it's quite heavy-handed. In their tactics that of propaganda, that it's never ending. Since they own whatever 95%+ of the matrix, meaning all of media and publishing and everything, then they can control the narrative and just pummel you with it, and this goes along, and do it as early as possible.
Right.
And so it's a shame that you have just all of these people along this whole route. And you know, when I was writing this document, once again going back to all of these people before me that I've compiled their work, is what it comes down to mostly. What happened to them, and knowing this, it's sort of most people. That's why most people don't go near the subject, because there will be
repercussions.
Repercussions proportionate with what you're putting out, and I'm not going to get into it, but I have felt these repercussions personally. And quite quickly, right after you were the first person to have me on 2 years ago, it happened. And nonetheless, it's, I'm right here. I'm still standing. So So it's and I'm still writing and want to make another film called Future Generations. And so it's, you know, this is what I was harking to when I was talking about Bishop Williamson, is that I just wish people had more of a an interest in history, I guess, or more of a mm-hmm. spine, or and I know this is happening. It's just begrudgingly slow. It seems that people are picking up on these most of, you know, these most taboo subjects, such as what we're talking about today. I mean, this is the third rail of, I guess, any subject that you could do. And it's funny, this is not, you know, sort of my real life's work. nor was 9/11. It's what I'm probably most noted for, or this now. But I'm becoming more of a historian, I guess. But I'm here for other aspects, which I'm trying to get to now. I can't let go of history, because you learn from the true history. And I was overwhelmed. I mean, I was always asking questions my whole life. And one of the first things that got me, I remember when they first started hearing about this 6 million, I was saying, well, you mean they just stood there and took it?
You're right. That's my first, that was the first thing that I thought.
Yeah.
How could they be so submissive,
right,
and allow themselves to do this?
Right, exactly.
I was a kid when I was asking this.
Me too. I was a young boy, probably an adolescent or mid-teens, when I said to myself, and I've told my friends, I was saying, like, what kind of story is this? Like, I would go, you know, I had a bunch of friends around me, I'd go, look, let's turn around and run at them.
Right.
I mean, if I'm going to die, you're going to have to shoot me down. You're
right.
Not going to go in submissively.
Well, I believed that there was a Holocaust, but I thought, what a bunch of sappy people to just march into the chamber, or just, why didn't they stand up for themselves? What kind of people are they? I mean, certainly 6 million, that's a lot of, that's a big army.
Yeah, well, they're victims. They're they're perpetual victims throughout history. And that's, you know, after I finished the 50 sections repudiating the Holocaust, I said to myself, oh, I better, you know, people might think this is just a one-off situation for these people. And so I said, I better write a brief history, which turned into over 100 pages and,
right,
3,300 years of their history. And I did not know, you know, I mean, I knew pretty much, I guess, from whatever, 1897 on or something.
Mm-hmm.
And but I didn't know, you know, I didn't know about what happened in with the Roman Empire. I didn't know what happened between 66 and 136 AD, these three major wars where the Romans tried to annihilate them.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, the Jews just kept on, and they weren't called Jews then, eh? So, but they kept on coming at the Romans and coming at them. And the Romans literally, it seems very much like they killed almost 2 million of them back then. Hundreds of thousands, or 600,000, 660,000, and some people say up to 1.1 million in one of these wars, and it just, and they wanted to annihilate them. And this is something that has gone on through history, that, you know, there's like 1,200 different places where these people have been kicked out. As we, most of us know, there are at least 79 countries. And this is, you know, it was 1290 AD in mm-hmm. in England, and 1492 in France, and I mean in Spain, and
mm-hmm.
From what I've gathered, around 1200 different locations throughout this 3300 year history of it's you know, it's like walking into 1200 bars and being kicked out of 1200 bars and blaming the bartender for kicking you out.
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's you know, when are you going to wake up and take a look in the mirror?
Sure.
And I don't come at this, I mean, there's a certain amount of anger and animosity in me about this story and how they propagate it and use it as a shield to get away with all of their dastardly, and dastardly is a nice word, maybe perverted, astonishing, ruthless deeds that they perpetrate throughout the world because of their control of the financing and the central banks of almost every country on the planet. And from that, everything that there is in every aspect of our life. So, but I tried to do it with, as I say in my the beginning of my piece, Holocaust Revisionism. It's I don't care who does what, so to speak. I just want to find the truth, and I'm not going to be fearful of anybody because they did it and I can't say they did it. That is, you got the wrong person. That's not going to stop me. I mean, it stops most people, I understand. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, you know, it's like I told you many times, I'm Roman Catholic, Irish, German, French. And if any one of these, you know, if the Catholics did it, or Irish, or German, or French, or whatever, did whatever, it doesn't matter to me. I'm going to call it like it. I see it.
Sure.
Like I've, and so, but with this, it's like you get labeled right away.
Sure.
Because once again, it's the Voltaire quote, you know who owns you by who you can't talk about.
Exactly.
So,
well, you mentioned Bishop Williamson, and then you also, which is, of course, he represented the Catholic Church, or under those Catholics under his jurisdiction.
Right.
But then you have to think of the other religious people who use the New Testament, who purportedly use the New Testament, and they seem to be missing some of the scriptures within the New Testament, the remarks by Jesus about the Jews. And it seems like there are some religious groups who place them on a pedestal of sorts, and they're leading a lot of people astray.
Yeah, it almost seems like they've been infiltrated.
I wonder. Yes, it would appear to be infiltration for certain.
Yeah, it's like John 8:44. I mean, that is probably the strongest quote that has been left, and maybe that will be somehow taken out, sort of like they're trying to take out Shylock and A Merchant of Venice, and sooner or later they will scrub history if we, of course, let them, or recreate history and scrub it at the same time, which is what they do.
That is what they do, and of course that's what they've done with the warfare, and they personally don't always do the scrubbing. But the organizations that they infiltrate and control certainly have, and the government officials that they control. For instance, after World War I, Herbert Hoover and a group of 1,500 agents went throughout Europe and collected all this evidence that pointed to the origination of World War I, and picked up. There were train loads. Boxcar loads full of documents that are now in a repository that are being concealed. And the reason that they did that was because, they wanted to conceal the who originated the war, who was behind it, and, of course, the millions upon millions of people who died in that war. And then after World War II, the same thing occurred. Only they'd learned from World War I how to do it easier, more properly, and they write the history. The victors write the history.
And more efficiently, huh?
Yes, they're very efficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I can jump a million different ways. I was turned on the TV, which I don't watch much TV, except for... tennis, which my boy Rafi Nadal, I think, is the greatest tennis player. But I turned it on, and I was sitting down, and I saw that Inglourious Basterds,
mm-hmm.
and And I said, no, you can't. And it was just in the beginning. And I was like, no, don't watch this. And I got through my meal and, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of it, and I shut it off. It was just, I don't know all of these people, how they sell their souls, like these people like Brad Pitt and the lot, to these warmongering
Well, those, when you consider who runs Hollywood, that's, if they want to be popular, they want to be in the movies, and a lot of young people grow up thinking, oh, I'd love to be in the movies, and wouldn't this be wonderful? But there's a price that you pay. I mean, you're working for the very people who are creating America's perceptions, and the
world's perceptions.
Sure. And when you consider the number of movies that were made after World War II, some of them were designated as documentaries, and some of them were for entertainment, but all of it was for, well, propaganda. And there were close to 500 movies since World War II that talk about how evil the Nazis were and what they did. And so, of course, that all contributes to the way that people view the world. That's their world view.
And you know what's interesting is that the people that I've discussed this with that are friends with me and they or people that are even more acquaintances that I broach the subject with, is that they come up, usually the first thing out of their mouths is, well, I've seen the pictures.
Right. Because 75% of the people learn best by visualization.
Yes.
So the best way you can make people believe something is to make a film.
Yes, and Billy Wilder made this film called Death Mills.
Right.
And you had pure propaganda. You had them... It was interesting. I was talking to someone on the phone, a friend, and I was going through the whole aspect of how difficult it was to find evidence of the Allied bombing of especially the rail routes to the camps, which then cut off the supplies, and which caused this. And I've been doing a piece for 2.5 years, which I haven't touched for a while, but I will finish. I'm just at the biggest block with his name, Count Folk. I'm terrible. Anyway, he was the head of these white buses, which went into the camps, and they had, this is when the Germans reached out. They realized that, they couldn't, feed and give medicine to the camps because of the Allied bombing that cut off the supply routes, mainly the autobahns and the railroads to the camps, especially the railroads.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened from 44 on, but in late 44 and early 45, the Germans reached out and to the International Red Cross, and this person was the head of the white buses, this count. And he, in my research of him, he was going to these camps in these white buses with the big red cross on top, and the Allied planes came and strafed him.
Yeah.
Many times. I mean,
yes.
And this is and killed people in his. I mean, did they not know that this was? They knew exactly.
Of course, they knew.
So what I came up with when I said this story, which very few people know. And the Allied bombing that cut it off, which very few people know, and all of a sudden I came to the conclusion: my God, this was done on purpose.
Yeah.
This was done on purpose, Deanna. This is my hypothesis, and it just came to me from the universe, and I believe it's true that they did this on purpose so that there would be typhus and starvation, so that they could bring in Billy Wilder and the group and put out this visualization so the people would be indoctrinated with the visualizations.
Yeah.
And I just went, oh my God. It took me back that I said, talk about diabolical. And I went, I mean, this is my own little theory. It came to me on a clear channel, as I sort of speak, because I know so many different intricate details. And I said, there's no other explanation for them scraping these white buses, these humanitarian
right.
buses coming in, and
right.
time and time again. The Allied, both the British and our 8th Air Force doing this.
And they also did that to Red Cross ships or ships, hospital ships associated with the war in the Pacific with Japan. And they also, with the dead bodies that everybody has seen in the movies, they also transported bodies of dead Germans from the camps, from the probably Eisenhower's camps in the Rhine-Meadow, to the German POW camps, labor camps, and took pictures of those dead German bodies and said, look what they did to these poor Jews.
Yes, it's and you still only have hundreds, but it is the visualization and the they bulldoze them together and put them in pits and
right.
so you have all of this horrific and the emaciated bodies.
Right.
And so, but of course this goes exactly contrary to what supposedly happened. They supposedly came in there and got gassed. So, which is, another strange thing about which, some people get it in the strangest ways. And one of them was a friend of my sister's who was stationed over. Her husband was a big shot in the intelligence and stationed over in Germany. And she understood how efficient the German people were. And so when she understood that, wait a second, why would they tattoo you, cut your hair off, da-da-da-da, give you new clothes, all just to kill you?
Exactly.
There's no way that these efficient Germans are going to do this.
Sure.
I mean, it's just, and which of course makes, there's so many little anecdotes like that that make unbelievable sense.
Right.
Right on the face value of it. It's just, and that's what got me is that, there was an abundance, an overwhelming abundance of this. I mean, I went from one thing to another, and I went back and forth with my sister for years. Oh, did you hear about this new one that shoots down their story? And oh, no, did you hear about this one? Did you hear about that one? And all of a sudden, it got to, I guess, the point to me that I said I have to write something about this, and
mm-hmm.
little did I know that it would turn into what it turned into. But I'm really happy that I thoroughly investigated it and compiled, all of these predecessors to me that have done such unbelievable work, knowing full well what was going to happen to them, and still did it. This is, I see this, as I know more about history, like John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Robert F. Kennedy, and they all knew they were going to be assassinated, and yet they did what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same with these people. They pretty much full well knew what was, the ramifications, as I did, as you do,
mm-hmm.
and yet we still do what we do. I mean, it's just, bless them all for, and all the people throughout history that have stood up and not knelt down to and being submissive to these tyrants.
Right.
It's just.
Well, you know that you're telling the truth when you're attacked. When you're attacked as viciously as these people have been, and put in prison, and if. What is it, like 16 European countries now?
No, I think it's up to 20. But go ahead. Yeah.
20, yeah, because they keep adding countries.
Yes, they do.
Of you cannot say anything negative about the Holocaust. You cannot. Holocaust denial is a crime. In Germany, too, of course.
Right.
And
yeah, we're not talking about like North Korea. We're talking about European countries that if you say not only if you say pretty much anything but the 6 million died by the big bad Nazis in the gas chambers.
Mm-hmm.
If you go off that subject and say something different, then you can get up to 7 years in some of these countries, right. As Zundel has. I mean, he got time here in our prison, then two plus years in a freaking hellhole in Canada,
mm-hmm.
and then five more years over in Germany.
Right.
So this was after.
And he republished a pamphlet, booklet.
Right. Did 6 million really die?
Yeah.
Which is what I mentioned earlier. That's the pamphlet that the France publisher put out they bombed him in his car. And you know, they firebombed Zundel's home also up in Toronto, and nobody's ever caught for this. The Farisan attacks, no one's caught.
Right.
It's every time no one's caught.
Right.
It's sort of leads you to believe that I never thought about that no one has, as far as I know, perhaps someone has been, but you would hear.
I don't know.
I don't either. It's.
And getting back to the gas situation in Germany to begin with, Adolf Hitler was inadvertently gassed. He was gassed. Part of the many people who were gassed was a victim of mustard gas. He spent some time in a hospital recuperating because it's terrible. I think it probably affected him for the rest of his life. He was absolutely, adamantly against using any kind of gas whatsoever. In fact, if they had used the gas, and they did have it, if they had used gas at Normandy, it would have altered the entire scope of the war. But he absolutely refused to use gas against anybody.
Unlike that other leader.
Yeah, Churchill. He wanted to use gas. Well, he did. They used gas against the Iraqis in the 20s.
Yep. Yes. And it's, it's funny. I was just doing a little research late last night, and I came up with, this is in quotes, the prime minister said that we hope to shatter 20 German cities as we had shattered Cologne and Dusseldorf and so on. More and more aeroplanes and bigger bombs. M. Stalin had heard of 2-ton bombs. We had now begun to use 4-ton bombs, and this would continue throughout the winter. If need be, as the war went on, we hoped to shatter almost every dwelling in almost every German city. Official transcript of the meeting at the Kremlin between Winston Churchill and Joseph Stalin, Wednesday, August 12th, 1942. And so...
That's 1942.
Right.
That's pretty early.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know if people know, but within 24 hours of Churchill becoming prime minister on May 10th, 1940, he ordered that for the first time ever in warfare, the RAF to attack German cities.
Sure.
And civilians targets for the first time ever.
But go ahead.
No, it's all right. It's just this just shows you. I mean, he is one of the greatest corrupt, strange scoundrels in history, Churchill.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
being very nice.
In fact, the British attacked Berlin, I think, 7 or 8 times before. Hitler finally retaliated and went to London. And he went there not to attack London proper, but just the military facilities near London.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's when I was looking for this last night, and I couldn't find it again, about the 8th Air Force, and the head of it was Doolittle. And he was asked to bomb Berlin. And he said no, that this there's civilians here, and these you're not bombing military targets. You're bombing civilian targets. I won't do that. And he was brushed aside, and they went ahead and did this. And this is when we crossed the Rubicon, I mean, we crossed the Rubicon many ways, but this, you know, everybody thinks it was the dropping, you know, whatever, the next year and the bombing of Hiroshima, Nagasaki, or the firebombing of Tokyo or Dresden. But it happened before that, in 1944, when we started bombing civilians in Germany, and knowing mm-hmm. full well, and there were people, you know, such as Doolittle, who said no.
Mm-hmm.
This is not right. I'm not doing it. And then they came in. They said, "Oh, the new person," and they said, "Oh, we're bombing this subway station type of thing as a cover." You know, it's when I look back, I said, "Well, he had somewhat of a moral high ground. At least some people, you know, during warfare. But you have this guy Churchill who." Who is provoking war.
Right.
And
well, you're talking about total warfare. In total warfare, they always go after the civilian population. And as far as the United States military, they started going after a civilian population during the so-called Civil War. And so the United States has always targeted civilian populations since the Civil War, and they actually started creating bombs and getting ready for warfare in 1936.
Who are you talking about now?
United States against Germany. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean that's supposedly when Churchill was given his marching orders.
Right.
In 1936, that's when Hitler realized. In October, I believe it was the 36, his four-year plan, that it's inevitable, more or less, that we're going to be attacked by Soviet Union. And he then realized it, and you see the more and more manufacturing of armaments from this time, but still not an unbelievable amount. This is one of the things that, of course, they fall back position about how Hitler – you know, coming to power on January 30, 33, got Germany out of this depression as the whole world was in and became, you know, just the poster boy or the poster country to get out of the depression. And they, you know, then when they couldn't knock that down anymore, then their fallback position was, well, they did it through armaments. And this is not the case. And they didn't really build up until after the war started in many respects.
Sure.
This whole argument of them coming out of the Depression because of their armament buildup is a bunch of malarkey also.
Exactly. It is lies.
But it's lies upon lies. Yes, it's one lie. We can't – well, okay, we got that lie shot down, so let's throw this lie in.
Sure.
It is actually – I get a sort of a almost humorous – it's not humorous at all, but I laugh because that's all it is.
Certainly.
And when you start uncovering, you know, each peel of the onion and everyone is a lie, it's sort of, you go, my God, can people be this deceitful?
And, yes, they can. Sure
yes, they can. It's, yes, they can. And it's, yes, and this is, you know, this whole topic we're talking about, Holocaust revisionism, it is the most deceitful. Because it is the third rail, it's the most taboo on purpose.
Right.
It's built in, the deceit is built into this. And the propaganda, like you said, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of films and documentaries. There's thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not 100,000 or more books on World War II and the Holocaust. And there's probably a million or more articles written about it. And there's the, you know... the dozens and dozens of Holocaust museums in this country. And, you know, you have the remembrance every which way you turn. There's something about the Holocaust. I read a piece by Glenn Greenwald yesterday that Paul Craig Roberts put out. And it was very good in many ways about the incident in France. But, of course, he put in the big bad Nazis and you know, how they were allowed to march here in this country and blah 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 blah, and that's freedom of speech, and but he works it in, You know,
sure.
It's just, it's like,
it's like it, no one else ever suffered. Nobody died during World War II except the Jews.
Which probably had the least amount of people that died.
They did have the least amount of people who died because they were very well protected. And as I mentioned, they grew. Their population grew during the war, where everybody else's ethnic population decreased.
Yeah, it's you know, it goes on, and we have the something about the gas chambers at the temperature of what Zyklon B works at, and I didn't know this. I don't think it's in this piece, although I have it to add into the piece, but I stumbled upon it again last night. And Zyklon B, the hydrogen cyanide. In the Zyklon B, it takes 26 degrees Celsius to make it work, which is 78.8 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
And so when you're – and there were no heaters in these so-called – these gas chambers. So for, I don't know, 9-10 months a year, it's not going to be 79 degrees Fahrenheit.
Right.
And if when the 2 months or 2.5 months or whatever that it might have been that temperature, it's only during the daytime it's going to be that temperature.
Sure.
In these places. So it was yet another piece of information that I did not know at all, and it's of course not put forth very very well, because why would we want to have, you know, exact chemical analysis of something that doesn't work when we're saying it works?
Sure.
It's just.
Look at Fred Leuchter's. I mean, he was the eminent, probably the only gas chamber engineer in our country.
Yeah.
And he went over during the Ernst Sandl trial. And if not for the Ernst Sandl trials, there were two of them, if not for his work and his courage, the scientific evidence would not have been as great if not for the sacrifice that he made. And so I'm very much indebted to him. And
yes,
I mean,
and
I
believe it was Farrison who told Zundel to do that.
Yes.
And you know, and Fred went over there and said, you know, I'm going to.
He believed in the Holocaust.
Yes, I'm going to be a straight shooter here. And Ernst said, yes, this is what we want.
And it came back and really literally destroyed his career.
Yes. Yeah. And it came back and of course, showed the what is known as Prussian blue. And
right.
The Prussian blue, which is what the cyanide will do to the walls, was not, you can even look. And it was not there. But when you go into the delousing chambers, which had hermetically sealed doors, which the gas chambers didn't.
Yeah, they just had wooden doors that opened
and
they had windows and
all
kinds, with a little hole in the ceiling, and they just dropped it in. Sure,
yeah.
And it killed everybody within. Killed 2,000 people in 5 minutes, and then
they opened the door and took them out.
And gosh, it was just.
That's funny how they got them out. Let me see. And without touching them, or how did they get them out of those rooms?
Exactly. They would have died in the process.
Especially when you had no chimneys.
Exactly. Unbelievable that people would believe this. And, of course, you start believing it when you're a little kid, and they have all these tour groups going over there during the summer, and these kids are indoctrinated, and they grow up.
Get them young. Get them young and show them those photographs and the motion pictures. And it's really the number one thing, like I said before, what people, they don't want to go any further. They know it. Matter of fact, I've told you the story before of an older woman friend that, you know, she thinks I'm like this genius and great. And she's known me for 17 and a half years. And I brought this up and she was like, who are you? And she goes, no, I've seen the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get through to her until I said, that do you think I would be so stupid to put this out and knowing the ramifications, what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the thing that got her, not any of the evidence.
Really?
But me knowing that I am exposing myself to retribution, a blowback on this, and she went, oh, you're right. You wouldn't be so that stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very strange how people, you know, will... She still, you know, still doesn't want to talk about it, but but she realizes that that's what got her, not any of this, you know, this evidence that is so overwhelming, you know. And it's like, I'm not saying, by the way, that, you know, some Jews weren't persecuted or murdered, you know, but I'm saying, especially on the Eastern Front there, you know, but there was, you know, whatever, 60, 70 million people killed in World War II.
Yes.
So you talk about, and who perpetrated this war? It was pretty much the Jewish financiers of the world that brought this about.
They're the ones that declared war against Germany in the spring of 1933.
That's right. You see, on March 24th, 1933, go Google that day, and you see what World Judea declares war on Germany. Exactly. This is what I bring up to people, too. I say, just Google that day. I believe it's still number one in Google. And you just click on the world headlines that day. And you know, the Madison Square Garden later on, and the whole, you know, Woolworths, they were protesting inside of Woolworths because they had some German goods. And, oh, yeah, this was a concerted effort for 6.5 years before September 1st, before they finally, they finally got Hitler to go in and save his own people inside of East Prussia.
In Poland, and Poland had been doing all kinds of sorties into German land for months and months. It was a response to what the Polish had been doing, and the Polish had been doing this with the promises from the British government and the United States government that those two governments would back the Polish government up, and the greatest number of Jews, 10% of the Polish citizenship
were
Jewish.
Yes.
That is where your greatest number of Jews lived.
That's right.
Because Poland used to be part of Russia, the Pale, which was set aside for Jewish people. It used to be that part. And so there were a lot of Jews there, and most of them were urban, lived in the cities. And they had a great deal of influence in the media and in the churches.
Yeah, you have, there was an agreement on March 31st, 1939, the Anglo-something agreement, and France jumped on it within a couple of hours, that said, we'll protect Poland.
Sure.
And as soon as this happened, and that if Germany ever steps foot into Poland, that we will declare war.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the fait accompli, actually, for the war. And that's when the provoking and these incidences escalated on the border of Poland and Germany on purpose,
right,
as an instigation.
Right.
To bring Hitler in and to stop this.
And Germany had never engaged ever before in any kind of a false flag event. The United States had perpetrated false flag events, beginning with the war with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And Britain was also, they knew how to do a false flag. But Germany, that was just not in the German character.
I always fell for the Reichstag fire as being a false flag for my first incarnation, I almost say, that because I said, oh, look at this. I read this story and this story and this story, and it was like, oh, it's that makes sense, sort of. And so you know, it's just... It's like there's no cause and effect, like Night of Broken Glass.
Right.
It's just a bunch of crazy Germans that want to do harm to Jews. It's you never hear what brought that about, or if that was a total false flag, almost
it
from
was.
Within. Yes,
it was.
Yep.
And the Jews have always been, since about the 1840s, 1850s, have had. They kind of took over the early communications network. They've always had a fabulous network throughout the world for communications.
Yes,
they've always
have.
Been in communication with each other. They've always been very unified as a group. And certainly that Kristallnacht was perpetrated by them.
Yeah, for bad PR, because Hitler was pissed off.
Yes, he was. It was the worst thing. That was the last thing that they would have done.
Exactly. It's sort of like a lot of things, like Assad gassing his own people the day that the UN inspectors show up in Damascus. It's like, come on.
Right.
That would be a good title of an essay. The last thing, the last thing possible.
And I covered that. I've covered all these things in book three, and yet even in the alternative media, you find people on most of the networks that are saying, "Oh yeah, that was a false flag that." And the Germans did this, and you'll find talk about those terrible, terrible, evil Nazis in the alternative media. So there, even people who should know better, who should study these things, have not done that.
I thought of an idea last year that it is to have debates.
Mm-hmm.
Free, open debates on people on both sides. And let's put our cards on the table, and on such subjects as what we're just talking about here, the Reichstag or a night of broken glass. Let's edify people, and let's put our cards on the table and say, here you go, and then you're called to the table, and you can't say this anymore. If it's a honest mistake and you buy into it, you see, certain people are. So far down the road, you have a hard time thinking it's an honest mistake is what it comes down to.
Oh, if you've been researching any amount of time, you're going to run into the truth.
It's
going to hit you. If you're really researching, you're just perpetuating deception and you're doing it for a very long time and you remain totally ignorant, then well.
Well, that's why debates would be really good.
Yes.
I was thinking of being the moderator. And
great.
I would be as fair as could be. Let's bring in both sides and not, have it as a personality contest. That wouldn't happen with me. I mean, we stick to the facts and blah, blah, blah. And pick out, specific parts of history that people seem to have a really hard time with, and put the cards on the table.
Sure, like the Gliwice incident that you referred to in Poland.
Yes, all of these, right? Or the one of the hardest things was going into Czechoslovakia, and this when I was doing my research on Rudolf Hess, and it's at rudolfhess.net if anybody wants to take a look at what I wrote. It was, they had him and they were interrogating him. I believe it was in the Tower at the time of London. And they asked him, you guys didn't want to more or less take over the world. Then why did you go in and invade Czechoslovakia after you had the Munich Agreement?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a major, major, major thing. And I was just talking to John Kaminsky about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you should write a piece on this, John. Because
mm-hmm.
This is the appeasement. Every time anybody doesn't do anything that the Jews don't want, they call it, you're like Chamberlain and the appeasement of Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
When they gave him part of Czechoslovakia that was already really German.
Right.
It was taken away at the Treaty of Versailles. Right. But then Hess, who I didn't know this, Hess said, well, the Soviets were coming in and building airstrips. And we couldn't let that happen.
Right.
And I then tried to proceed to find if this was true. I believed Hess because I believe he's a really honorable guy.
Oh, he was. I mean, that's why they had to keep him under wraps for all that time. That's why they murdered him. And
at 93 years old, right.
Right.
The last person in the prison for the last 21 years or whatever, right.
By himself, yeah.
Yes, by himself. Prison for 600.
Yeah, I wrote about Czechoslovakia.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay.
in my third book.
And
Kristallnacht and
because
and,
I did get confirmation of this, and it was
Jürgen
Rieger, who was the attorney that got beat up outside the Ernest Zundel's attorney in Germany that got beat up outside the courthouse. I found out, wrote about partially about this, and so it helped collaborate what Hess said. And
right.
So when people don't understand, I mean, it's sort of like this is a huge subject in history that because you see now they want to take over the world. They gave them what they wanted and they had to go and they invaded Czechoslovakia. This shows how bad they are.
Well, when you look at the people, the actual people who have extended their tentacles into every part of the world, it isn't the Germans. And when the Germans did collaborate with some of their country, it was beneficial for both countries, such as when they said they would...
Austria.
They would... Oh, absolutely. And Austrian officials are the ones that approached Hitler and said... We'd really like to join the Reich again because, well, they were German-speaking and they'd been part of it before.
And they voted on it, huh?
Yes.
And it was 99.74% for
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So the 0.0006% were against it.
Right.
I couldn't imagine who they were.
I wonder.
These kind of things are very nicely left out of history, all of the things we're talking about.
Sure.
Matter of fact, they're not left out of history. They are turned
concealed.
About. Concealed. Or they're turned about when and sort of like, you know, no one knows, I mean, not your listening audience, but in the general populace, you ask who overthrew the czars in Russia in the fall of 1917. And, you know, if you're lucky if they say communist or Bolshevik revolution.
Right.
If they know anything at all, but of course they don't know that it was a Jewish revolution.
Right.
And then they proceeded to annihilate tens of millions of Gentiles.
Exactly.
And so some people say up to 66 million. Including what happened in the Ukraine in 32 and 33, the starving to death of 6 to 10 million Ukrainians because they were...
They confiscated the food.
Yeah, they confiscated the food in the heartland, in like Arkansas and Nebraska, which is Ukraine.
Exactly.
So where they made all the food, they confiscated it and they starved the people to death, which is their really MO of the worst death in the world. But you have, you know, that story, which is not in any history book, and you have it turned around into this story, the Holocaust.
Right.
And so you have, you know, when the Soviet Union first was created in 1922, you know, around 85 or plus percent of their government was run by Jews.
Right.
So you have, and these people were head of a lot of the agencies that were killing the Christians, the Orthodox Christians and the Gentiles of Russia and putting them into the gulags and such, where even Alexander Solzhenitsyn said 60 million were perished of us.
Okay.
So you have, and then, of course, he was banned.
Right. He went to the gulags.
Yes, how dare you. You say that, but you have somebody of his and saying it. Otherwise, you know, it would just be perhaps hearsay.
Sure.
You know. So anyway, you have that piece of history, which is like beyond huge, and that is morphed and turned around into the suffering of the Jews at the hands of, once again, the evil Nazis.
Right.
Into that they gassed 6 million of us, and we went in willingly, you know, more or less, like we were bringing up earlier, and when there were only tops somewhere between 3 and 4 million under the whole Reich itself, and the population increased, and so you just and the, you know, the head of I don't have it off, I'm doing this off the top of my head, even not even with notes, but I guess I should look into my notes, but the head person that looked and did the autopsies for our government, it was an army, I forget his name, but he found nobody was gassed. And he was the head of
exactly, yes. And nobody was ever gassed. Oh.
Right, the bodies weren't the red color.
They weren't red,
should,
yes.
Right, that they should have been if they were gassed with Zyklon B.
Right.
And so you have just these unbelievable amount of factual evidence that is not brought forth. That's why, by the way, I'd say at the end of my 9/11 work, and the end of this piece, I will debate anybody, and on video, in an open debate, and I don't care how many people are debating me, I'll take them on by myself, or it would be even better to have a debate with, you know, 3 or 4 people on either side,
a kind of a panel,
a panel debate,
mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah.
And really to be not antagonistic to each other, but to find the truth, but they don't want this.
Sure,
this is
and
the last.
And not just about the Holocaust. Now, I've conducted a couple of debates on my radio program. Two specifically about the Holocaust, and Fritz Berg participated in two of those. And then Carolyn Jaeger debated a gentleman about Adolf Hitler. He'd put out a movie, and he was actually going to come back and debate. Oh, I believe it was Fritz Berg, and he kind of, well, this gentleman simply didn't answer the second email. He was going to debate Rodney Martin. Okay.
Ah.
And Rodney and this fella. Did one debate. It was going to be kind of a three-part debate. And he just didn't ever answer any more emails. So he didn't say, oh, well, he's got me beat and I'm a coward, so I'm not going to come back and do this. He simply just didn't answer any more emails.
Yeah, it's underneath me. I'm not going to dignify you with having a debate.
Sure.
This is the, you know, the some of the rhetoric you get.
Sure.
This is that I'm not going to put you up in statute by debating something like the Holocaust, which everybody knows happened.
Right.
You're just a raving lunatic.
But if you debate, like you were talking about, having a debate, say, about a specific thing, a specific event, or a time period, then it would certainly be, I think, very efficacious, very effective.
Yes.
Oh,
yep.
But there's mm-hmm. one thing about a debate, and this is something that I learned from B.K. Ekman, Beverly K. Ekman. In order to have a legitimate debate, all the parties must be honest. If you are going to have a debate, and we've all listened to debates, if you are going to have a debate, and if one person really is just trying to impose their views on the other party,
mm-hmm.
they are going to use all kinds of techniques. They're going to use the Delphi technique.
Right, yep.
And so the parties to a debate must be honest. And if you have a deceptive participant, the debate is not
that's
going
where,
to
that's
work.
Where the moderator has to step in.
Exactly.
And say, this is blatantly false.
Right.
I'm not supposed to say this as a moderator, but this person has now overstepped the boundary, and I can attest to this. That let's, you know, this I, you know, as far as I know, or blah, 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 this is not true. And why, you know, give us more detail on that, please.
Sure. sure.
kind of thing, you know, and hold them to the fire or her to the fire, so to speak.
And the other thing about a debate is conducted in as an educational vehicle. If two people are debating about a particular thing, and the one honest person brings honesty and detail and scientific facts to the table, and then the other participant rejects the scientific evidence, rejects everything, and continues to spew forth the same garbage.
Yeah. What about the bodies? You've all seen the bodies, kind of.
Yes.
Thing. Right.
Yes.
Yes. It goes to the emotional kind of.
Yes.
Reptilian brain.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think you cannot do a debate based on emotion, but you have to. It does have to be based on science, and like Fred Leuchter's science. That's science, okay? That is bringing science to the table. You cannot say, and you cannot refute that by saying, as you mentioned, well, we saw all the bodies.
Right. Yeah, or we heard the testimony. That's the number two thing.
Oh, the testimony.
We've heard the testimony from countless survivors.
And Eric Hunt has done an absolute superb job at refuting, showing that these testimonies are so bizarre and
yes.
ludicrous, as nobody who would believe these. I have no idea who would even believe this garbage. Like the lady who said
swallowed the diamonds.
Yes, the diamond swallower. That's akin to a sword swallower.
Yes, exactly. The apple story about the marriage and the,
yeah.
and Oprah and I mean yeah. But the thing that gets me is that. When people bring that up, I say you do realize that there were camps in you know Germany and all these other places and that they were all the only camps that got liberated were in Poland that are now perceived to be the death camps. But all of these Jews beforehand swore on a stack of Torahs. That there were gas chambers in these other camps until the historians, the Holocaust revisionists have went and documented that there were no gas chambers in any of the camps inside Germany and Austria and Alsace and these areas. So what these Jews were saying that there were is now proved to be totally false.
Exactly,
and that the only leg that they had to stand on are the camps inside of Poland,
mm-hmm.
and which the Soviets overran and have, as we know, rebuilt different aspects of it, and you have you know David Cole as a young boy going in there and doing a wonderful video, and Frederick Tobin has done a wonderful video on that. And you have air-photo, which shows you all the reconnaissance photographs of the area,
exactly.
and it's proof positive of many things, not just no gas chamber, and you know the commandant's office is supposedly right next to the gas chamber.
Right.
I mean, all sorts of just you know irrefutable evidence.
Sure.
And the coal shipments coming in, or the coke, they call it, shipments coming in that were verifiable. I mean, or as I've told you before, two aspects that David Irving, when I met him, we discussed, and he told me, was that the MI6 broke the code, the Enigma code, in I think it was February of 42. I'm not sure, but something like that. They broke it, and that they
knew what was going on.
The commandants every day were giving specific details, like good Germans would, back to Berlin on everything, and they eavesdropped on all of this, and they never found out. You know, oh, we killed 16,406 Jews today. This was never brought up in any of these. Or else, the other one was that. Not one letter has ever been found from any German officer that says, I didn't want to do this.
Sure. Sure.
That, you know, in a attic or a basement or a flea market, or there's not one letter back home to their mother, their wife, their daughter, whatever, saying, this is, I didn't want to do this. What are we doing? So these kind of, I don't know if you call them anecdotal evidence. One after another after another. Like, you know, there's no blueprints for the gas chambers themselves.
None.
Money allocated that right. They found a trail.
There's no document saying we're going to annihilate destroy all the Jews. If there had been, they would have produced it.
Oh God, yes, they would have. I mean, it's just it just goes. You know, I begin this whole thing by saying, alluding back to what you said, brought up earlier, which is that. The number one thing is that there are like 20 countries now that you're not allowed to talk about this.
Wow.
And so to me, I say at the end of that first little section, I say you really don't need to read the next 49 areas. Because if you do not debate this subject, this is, by the way, you know, let's put this in context. This is the only subject in historical history. The only topic in the history of our being, civilization, 5,000-6,000 years now, that you cannot have an open debate on. And furthermore, in these 20 countries and elsewhere, but in these specifically 20 countries now, if you do say anything but, like I said before, the 6 million killed by the evil Nazis and Jews in gas chambers, then... you can go to jail and up to 7 years in jail. And many people have, such as David Irving and Rudolph and Zernell and all of these people. I mean, many, many, many people have. So to me, this is the biggest red flag that there is. If you don't want to debate an issue and you go so far as to, and just once again, the only historical issue that you cannot debate and the only historical issue in the whole history of our civilization that you can go to jail for if you don't say the right thing in these 20 countries. Well, this is too much for me. I don't care what, if it was any subject, I would say the other people are full of it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I see things in like the negative now, in the reverse. And I have, for like now going on 28, 29 years. And, since the Challenger explosion,
mm-hmm.
and I see things on sort of what they do in their response to that, and this is like seeing it in the negative, that they will not allow any debate or saying anything in these 20 countries, and you go so far as to go to jail if you do. Well, I mean, that's just, they're showing their hand.
Sure.
And quite blatantly showing their hand. And you really, I mean, if that doesn't get you, then, you know, read on the next 49 different sections I have. Because it just goes one after another and after another. And this is, of course, how I see things, is that, you know, it's overwhelming evidence. It's some are huge red flags. Some are, you know, smaller red flags. Some are medium-sized red flags. But when you get a preponderance of these and you know, dozens and dozens and dozens, and then you take a look at the other side and you're seeing just pretty much emotion driving it, emotion and now a propaganda machine for the last 40 years that has been nonstop promoting this and making it mandatory in the schools and museums and what have you. And now, you know, it's going to be you're going to be hearing about the 70th anniversary of liberation of Auschwitz for a week before and a few days after, after.
Sure.
I mean, it's going to take the headlines. They're going to get, you know, Putin and Obama there and Spielberg and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
It's going to be, it's going to be ad nauseum kind of thing. And it's going to, once again, dictate the conversation.
Sure.
And you will hear, evidently, you know, you'll hear people saying that, you know, there are some people that are say this is not true and make statements to the such that these people cannot be heard, and they're lunatics type of thing, and they'll allude to this. They go so far. It's interesting that sometimes they bring this up now. It's sort of like what Bush did in the United Nations in the fall of 2001 when he said, "Don't listen to any of the 9/11 conspiracy theories, and don't
right.
question it." And that's why I called my first piece "Questioning September 11th" because this guy went and said, "Don't question it." And I said, "Thank you." I got that title from him. So anyway, you have these Holocaust survivors, which is a whole now industry. You know,
sure. Oh, absolutely. It is an industry, and they make a lot of money with their conference,
their shakedown.
Their shakedown. That is exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I mean, you have to hand it to them, by the way.
Yeah.
They really do pull at the heartstrings of emotionally very well.
And you didn't even have to be born. You could be
yes.
in your mother's womb and still collect reparations.
And you don't need to be in Germany, right.
If you lived in any part of Germany
yeah.
or in any part, I mean, you could be living in Florida and collect reparations if you were alive during the time. Or if you even went there for 10 minutes, if you, I just did a layover in some...
Yeah. It's
train station, then you're a Holocaust survivor. And so Germany has paid billions of dollars.
I believe it's over 100 billion Reichsmarks.
Wow.
That they paid. And I believe the number is around 6 million, believe it or not, that have put forth to get benefits. I believe over 4 million have and are. Or
right.
have received benefits of over 100 billion marks. And so...
Unbelievable.
And so it's an interesting... Wait a second. Did you say 6 billion? 6 million mark?
Yeah.
And, so the amount that are supposedly dead are now survivors wanting to collect benefits.
Well, how many survivors could there possibly be? If people believe that 6 million died, how come there's... million survive. There's so many survivors. And when you were talking about eyewitnesses, there's several people that claim to have escaped from Auschwitz, and they were giving numbers. They said, oh, yeah, there was so-and-so was in the infirmary, and they used the hospital to do these medical experiments they were getting all of these internal figures, and I'm thinking the first question I would say is how would a prisoner know this, and if they were killing everybody in Auschwitz and it was such an impenetrable fortress, how did you happen to escape?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just nobody's right. asking questions.
Right, and there was, I believe, 18 crematory ovens in Auschwitz, and they were the small type.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this company sued a book publisher in Germany because they were alluding to the fact that they collaborated, and they were saying, "You fools, we made much bigger ovens." You think the Germans are going to be so stupid to purchase 18 one-body ovens when you could have bought huge ovens from us?
Sure.
And they won the suit and got it taken out of this book in Germany, but not in the United States. So it's sort of these little small things like that. And, of course, the crematory ovens were there for the mostly typhus that was running rampant in camps, and they tried their hardest, the Germans, to eradicate it, but it kept on coming back. And so it's and to go to something else, just jumping, people in this country have to remember that in early 1942 we rounded up almost 120,000 Japanese.
Mm-hmm. We also
and interned them
up a bunch
mostly
of
Japanese. Yes. Yeah.
From another country. from Central America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so we have this on our hands, and you know, another thing that we did, which is an interesting, just jumps into my brain, it, that which has a number of 6 million attached to it, is back in 1872 and 1873, to psychologically damage the Plain Indians, we annihilated around 6 million buffalo. And so we have this, and I just found that strange when I stumbled upon that years ago. I said, what, you know, and wow. 6 million buffalo that we wiped out, just, and left mostly the carcasses right there where they were
Which
shot.
Which is just
just to put the final nail in, sort of in the psychological damage of the Indians, because of course they used the buffalo and
for everything.
Yes, for every last thing, and when they killed it, major kind of ceremonies and you know. Anyway, it's just, but you, and then you know, you go and you have 236 times that the 6 million number is used before World War II. In 236 different references now, it's been documented that the Jewish press has used the 6 million numbers to say that 6 million Jews are in trouble, that they're about to this. And this started sort of in the 1870s, but really ratcheted up in World War One. And prior to World War II, and saying that Hitler, you know, is going to kill 6 million of us, and it's they have to have this number. That's why this number is so important. Is that this number is attached to their return to steal Palestine? And
right.
So,
6 million have to die in the ovens before they can return to Palestine.
Exactly. So yeah. It's just you have, you know, it just. And by the way, there's all of these frauds, like we were saying about these survivors, you know, the, and the, all their different stories. And I have a whole section of the number of Jews who applied for survivors' pensions and all of the frauds. And, you know, the big things like the Auschwitz death camp. You know, now that we're coming up to the 70th commemoration, huh, you're not going to hear that the plaque was changed from 4 million to 1.5 million.
Right.
And, of course, that is still a blatant lie. But this was very quietly changed, I think back in 91 or 89 or 91. And that, so you once again, you cannot take that missing 2.5 million off the 6 million to get 3.5 million now. If you say that in any of these top 20 countries, which is total fact, you can then still be liable to go to jail.
So whoever changed that sign.
Yes, we should get to the bottom of that.
Yeah. we want to know who changed that sign, and let's get some arrest warrants out there.
Yeah, by the way, it was Rudolph did a lot of work that Fred did in the beginning. And then what is little known is the Polish government themselves did work, chemical analysis of it, and found out the same things, but that was not
didn't come out
didn't find the light of day. It's so, and I have it somewhere in this document, that the exact name of it and all this stuff, but it was, so this has been, it's not been just done once, you know. And the other thing is about the buried bodies,
right?
And so, you know, you have 6 million. Wow. I mean, not only that, as we talked about earlier, that, okay, you gassed them with Zyklon B, okay, but it has to be 78.8 degrees Fahrenheit for that to work. So it only works maybe 10% of the whole year, time-wise. And but then you do it, and you get, you know, 2,000 at a time, and then you get the bodies, and they're all gas. So how the hell do you get them out of the rooms without contaminating yourself? Oh, but you do, and then you get them, and you, what do you do with the bodies? You know, do you put them in open fire in pits, or do you just bury the bodies, or do you put them in bury the bodies, then you unbury the bodies, and
yes,
put them and fire the bodies, then put them back in ashes? Okay, yeah, that's what we did, right? And And then
even
you
ashes.
Get what these people from. Yes, well, they as you well know, they went there with ground penetrating radar for like weeks and weeks, mm-hmm. and did all this, core sampling, and all they found was the Commandant's German Shepherd. No, so I mean, and then it's I know it's. But it's like, okay, and the water table is quite high and all this other stuff and, all of this really physical evidence.
Yeah.
That they – and it's just wonderful how they can, they can just put out the stories and the shoes, that once again, the shoes and the hair, that in these museums.
Right.
It's like they have – this is supposed to mean something.
Right. Well, they didn't come into camp naked, okay? They came into camp wearing probably lice-filled shoes.
Yep.
And they got new shoes. They got clean clothes.
That's right. They were freaking shaved. They were deloused. They got clean clothes, clean shoes. Right. And put numbers on them. Right.
Yeah.
We did all this just so we could then kill them.
Right.
Because we were in the middle of a war and we had, lots of time to waste.
Sure. Let me read you a comment from one of our listeners. he really says some really funny things quite often, actually. You don't understand the concept of Jewish suffering. It's more serious for a Jew to miss a meal than it is for 100 Gentiles to starve to death. Now, that's not funny, but that's really pretty accurate. But it's very serious concept here.
It's my sister told me a long time ago, a Jew will slap you across the face and say, "Why'd you hurt my hand?" I mean, it's like, okay. But we're laughing at it, but it's true. I mean, matter of fact, I was thinking, I probably said this to you before, about becoming a stand-up. And because I have a wide breadth of knowledge
but
about...
But you'd get thrown at the first... If you started doing these jokes...
Oh, my God. If I did, yes. Well, first of all, who owns most of the comedy clubs?
Exactly. Club?
So I wouldn't get very far.
That's why there's so many Jewish comics.
Exactly. Yes.
They own that...
Yeah, particular. But yes, it would be, and I would go out and say, what the effing do you want to know about? But it better be important. And I'd go out with no kind of, gig, just going out and freelancing it, just ad-libbing it and totally.
Sure.
But I was thinking of doing this, but I wouldn't get very far. It would just.
You'd get kicked out within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yes. And probably would have to have like 6 Bruce Lees around me to get to the parking lot to get into my car to leave. I mean, but what I was trying to get at here is that maybe there should be some humor put into this. I mean, because, we've snickered and laughed at different things because they are so outlandish.
Well, I know the person who sent the email, and he is very funny, but it isn't really... It's funny because I know him.
Right, right.
But...
That they're getting away from that. With this is not funny. That's why, matter of fact, sometimes the best way in to people is not with all this factual evidence.
Right.
It's with humor.
Yeah.
And it's like, and I could put together in my mind just making fun of this all. And people would be, oh, my God. Some people would be totally aghast, but some people would be going, oh, my God. He's actually saying something.
Right.
Like, and it goes through it in a different wavelength to people, a different frequency it goes in, and the frequency of humor, which usually gets through to people on a much more, like a better way than intellectual factual evidence. It's just very strange. But because they own the emotional side of it so much, and it's – anyway, Jaeger brought this up, Carolyn and others. And the camps had post office, hospital, maternity ward.
Right.
Libraries,
cinema. They had
a theater,
and
jail, school, swimming pool, sauna. They had a brothel. I like the brothel myself.
Yes. Orchestra, choir, soccer fields, weddings, air raid shelters, their own money, passports, photographs, and death certificates, and punishment reports. So, boy, this is a whole lot of things to do if you just want to kill somebody. I mean, really.
Exactly.
It was just a front. Yeah, that's what it was. It was just a big front that the Germans put on because they wanted to kill 6 million of them.
Right.
And they wanted to do it in the most slow, in most inefficient manner they could think of.
Right.
That's it. Yeah.
And then. And while they were doing it, they wanted to serenade them with their orchestra and all the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys can put on plays. I really do like the brothel, though, myself. Really? I mean, that's just. I wonder who they brought in for the brothels. I'd like to go into that a little bit more. Was it who were the girls that anyway? It's but it, you know it, it's once again number what was it number 10 reference to the 6 million Jews killed prior to Nuremberg. We went over that 236. We went over there was never 6 million Jews under the total German occupation. That the Jewish population. From 33 to 49 actually increased. Go ahead.
Yeah. Let me read you a comment from the chat room. He said, I'm hard pressed to find a handful of relatives, but almost all survivors seem to have hundreds who died in the Holocaust.
Yeah. This is, it's like.
That's true.
Yeah, it's amazing. How it's, their father, it's like Jerry Springer, his parents were in the Holocaust and, they survived.
Yes, everybody's parents were in the Holocaust, but everybody's parents they came over here and they had me and.
Yeah, yeah.
Made millions of dollars in New York and.
Oh, yeah. And I brought the whole TV down to the least common denominator of stupid. Stupidry, is that a new word?
Yeah.
It's just, he crossed my path twice in my life, that boy, Springer. And both times, I didn't notice it the second time until somebody pointed it out, and I wanted to go after him. I lived in Sarasota. He actually crossed my path in this life twice, and I didn't.
Yikes.
I didn't freaking tell him who he was, and excuse me. But yeah. if I ever get him again, I was in both situations. I was with company, and it was, anyway. But I was like he's one of the people that just I detest.
Yes.
He was making like $60 million a year off that show. He was number two in TV. Oprah was making like $100 million. He was making $60 million a year. That freaking lowlife.
Wow.
Freaking throwing out that garbage, spewing his garbage. Matter of fact, somebody killed somebody in Sarasota where he lives, where I was from, huh?
And
because of his show, and still no repercussions on him. Anyway, it's who started World War II? Judea declares war on Germany, March 24, 1933. The Final Solution, that they turned that whole thing around from the Madagascar resettlement plans and the transfer agreements. you have the no gas chambers were ever found. Except for those to delouse. Not one plan, order, photo, budget, or blueprint for gas chambers was ever found. Not one photograph or film was ever found of any gas chamber. Not one single autopsy body at any camp has been shown to have been gassed. And how did the Germans move all those supposed gassed bodies? So they were
busy fighting a war, for one thing.
Yeah, it's just, but not one plan... order, photo, budget, right. or blueprint for any gas chamber was ever found. I'd like to repeat that. So it's because people, because if they were, you would have seen them.
Right.
And that may be out of all of the things that I can say that it's one of the biggest ones because, of course, we're talking about 6 million people in gas chambers.
Right.
so it's, and once again, it's supposedly all Jews and it's not, it's probably much less than 40% that out of the 271 or 281,000 that the International Red Cross has said. I have another one about camp propaganda and by the way, I usually like in all of these subjects that I put out, I put like maybe a paragraph of my own synopsis of it. And then I, I give you between 5 and 50 links to all different short stories, scholarly posts, videos.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so, and I put in quotes from people throughout all time who have, you know, it's sort of like Martin Luther. Huh? You know, not many people know that Martin Luther, from the referendum, his last book was on the Jews and their lies.
Right.
So, you know, here you have one of the major people throughout history, and his last sermon, he was adamant in getting these people out of Germany, what was in Germany then, but and most likely he was assassinated by these people for doing this. So, you know, and this has happened throughout all time. Like, you know, I didn't realize, you know, I always thought Julius Caesar just got killed by his own, and I didn't realize really what happened to him. And that these people, by the way, you know, we can put blame on the Jews. And I begin my whole thing about saying, you know, if there were, you know, people say, oh, there's good Jews. I say, well, okay, where are they? Because why do I have to put my neck on the guillotine to write this if there are good Jews? Because the good Jews should be exposing them their own, as most groups do.
I can count on
one hand.
One hand. I mean, you're Benjamin Friedman.
Right.
Benjamin
Friedman. Yeah.
Benjamin Friedman,
perhaps David Cole in certain ways. You know, there's a few that
Paul
have,
Eisen currently is doing some very good work.
The Azid guy, you know, but it's I've had this running joke with Kaminsky about this for years. About and I say, well, write it. I said, you know, there's only on one hand. Or I said, perhaps really, if you want to stretch it, you know, you can get 10.
But those are the public Jews. I mean, you also have to consider the private Jews. Like, is a tailor that works in the, you know, downtown, that raises his family, is he a good Jew, or is he cheating on his wife or whatever? I mean, I used to work in the textile industry, and I mean, they were probably not any part of a major conspiracy. They probably wouldn't have killed anybody. But honestly, I can honestly say that I never met one that I would say was the
a righteous, honorable.
Yeah,
forthright, morally. Yeah, you know.
They always cheated me. Forever cheated me on my commission. If you went to a trade show, they would be.
They always try to get over on you. Push the limits on how they could try to get over on you, just to test to see where you say enough's enough.
Right, or they would be trying to pick up. They would be trying. They're known cheaters on their wives.
Right. You know, I've brought this up now, and it's that there is this whole thing about the good Jews, and you know, you cannot. When I first got into this, it was actually Kaminsky who said it. He's a good friend, and he used to go out with my sister for years, and he told me, you know, well, who are the good Jews? And I said, you can't make such blanket statements.
Mm-hmm.
This is like 13 years ago, 14 years ago, whatever it was, 12, And I said, you know, I went out with a really beautiful Jewish woman back in New York, and she said, I'm making up for all the freaking terrible cheap Jews there are.
Yeah.
But we never got into, this is back in 1980. Huh? Mm-hmm. We never got into, you know, all the issues. Nonetheless, what I'm getting at here is that I have, what I'm about to put forth is that since the Lebanon War in 2006, where the IDF went into Lebanon and demolished Lebanon, broke all these international, and the best picture of that I have is a Red Cross and ambulance with a Red Cross on top of the roof and a missile going straight through, dead center of the Red Cross. That is my anyway, but you have them leveling whole cities like. And they did the same thing in Gaza, and it's a certain term for that. But then since 2006 and the Lebanon atrocity, and you can go back beforehand, but I'm just going from there on. on, and all of the times they've went into Gaza, and especially Gaza. Gaza is what, 1.9 million people, open air prison, half of them children, totally defenseless.
Sure.
And they say they're shooting like bottle rockets at them. And who knows who's shooting the bottle rockets, but nobody dies. And if you see these little missiles that they're supposedly Hamas is shooting at them, you see the when one is landed in southern, only southern Israel, you see a very, very small damage. I mean, extremely, mm-hmm. like two foot wide by about a foot deep. Mm-hmm. Okay, they are nothing. And so you have that against the most sophisticated weaponry in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Going against a defenseless, totally defenseless people, half of them children once again. And this happens time and time again every like 2 or 3 years now. And it just happened again last summer, of course, where, you know, at least 2,300 have died, half of them children and innocent people, totally. And
well, the United States government did that to Germany, too. So.
Yes, but what I'm getting at here is that I've looked at polls of all of these occurrences.
Right.
And in Israel, and I've seen that it's between 95% and 98% of the Israeli Jews are all for this.
Wow.
So I think to myself, I went and said, wow. And some of them are very strange. Like some of them say 80% of the people in Israel are against this. And then you realize that, you know, 20% of the people in Israel aren't Jews.
Right.
So it's like, so they try to change it up a little bit. But when you do the math on it, what I'm getting at here is that, yes, and look, I know people get fooled by everything. You know, when I was doing my 9/11 research, it was like 89% to 91% of people got fooled with 9/11. Hey, you know, the guy in the cave did it and that kind of thing. And blah, blah. I understand that. But we're talking about now, like Gaza, the last few times in Gaza.
Right.
We're talking about the most sophisticated weapons in the world against totally defenseless children, pretty
right.
much. Half of
Now, Stephen Lindman has written some.
There you go. Yes.
He's a good one. And I personally know of some good
yes,
Jewish people
yes, yes.
who have done some remarkable things, have really stood
Norman,
up for.
Norman Finkelstein, in some regards, has done
right.
some good work, especially with the survivor type of thing and the
yes.
retribution. Yeah, but
in the industry and whatnot.
Yes, the whole industry. It's real interesting. I heard a speech of his that he gave last summer, and I listened to the whole thing. And it's really well. It's very done very well, but it's still I don't know the exact word, but he's still Jewish, is what it comes down to. And yes, I what I'm trying to point out here is that you have the most horrendous atrocities happen to Gazans, and less than 5% of the Israeli Jews are against it.
Right. And Gilad,
that's what I'm saying.
Gilad Atzman.
Right. Yes.
I mean, I've had him on my program. And so and of course, when these people do speak out, they are totally, completely ostracized by the group.
Yeah,
so,
they're self-hating Jews.
Yes.
Of course. It's just, you know, this goes with how dare you. But the thing is that there are so very few of them.
Right.
And so very few of them, like you're laughing, Benjamin Freeman. No, Benjamin Freeman. You know, that it's just
yes.
because that they get to the real the real gist of the matter, the of like Friedman did. So it's there are very few of them. And so, you know, it was just like going back to the Holocaust. The Coke deliveries weren't there. The there's one I like was Himmler said reduce deaths at all camps ordered on December 28th, 1942. So you have, you know, the person that's supposedly in charge of killing them all saying no. Here's the thing of reducing the deaths or Rudolf Haas. The commandant,
right.
who was
at Auschwitz, yeah.
right, found guilty and murdered, killed for doing what he did.
Mark, we are out of time. We have to do this again because to get through, I mean, we just barely scratched the surface here.
Yes, it's yeah.
So So let's schedule something.
Yeah, I mean,
out.
The history of what we're
sure.
Exactly.
And thank you once again, Deanna. Once you know, it's
well,
what
thank
you've
you.
Done, what you've done, written, and what you do in your shows is really bravo. And
well,
the history
you.
That you bring up, and you know, it's just it's. I'm very happy, and maybe somehow we will try to do debates.
Let's do that.
Okay, HolocaustRevisionism.com.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you
for listening, and bye-bye. Talk to you soon. We're I'm having a program tomorrow, too.
It starts with you and me.
It starts with you.
It starts with you and me.